This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Welcome to In the News This Week, the podcast from some of the team who've worked on Have I Got News For You.
I'm Emerald Paston.
I'm Mike Raymond.
I'm Queenie Miller.
And I'm Jack Harris.
We'll be taking you through the big and not so big stories in the news this week when the TV show can't.
Think of it like this. If the main show is a brand new $200 million White House ballroom, then we're the Portaloo they use while building it. How are we the Portaloo, I wonder?
More useful.
We are useful.
We're more useful.
We can be used for other things.
Exactly.
Also, one of us gets sent to Glastonbury 1 week a year and entered by lots of different people.
Wow. Okay.
Lowering the tone, Mike.
I like that none of us have said we're full of shit.
And that feels like the wrong way to start a podcast.
Yeah.
Have you seen the pictures of the ballroom extension?
It's every bit as tacky and horrendous as you would.
But it absolutely dwarfs the White House.
Really?
It's insane. Yeah. It's so big. It's so big.
And it essentially looks like if you use a Formula One car to tow a caravan, but like a really natty caravan. It's just like it's this beautiful thing being, yeah. And it's got this horrendous thing on the back of it.
Very Trump.
Does sound like a toilet.
Yeah, a big $200 million toilet.
It kind of comes off the back of the newly revealed Rose Garden, which I don't know if you saw the pictures of that as well, which was like, there's no kind of, it's just basically just white patio. Right.
What?
Yeah, it's like they've basically taken a green space and then just paved over it.
Well, he does like to keep it white.
There we go, yeah. I thought it was quite a good visual representation of his green policies. Yeah. And that they've just like basically wiped out anything green and just stuck it with, like you say, the white patio.
Yeah.
I don't know if we were even going to get to the whole like him sacking the head of the Bureau of Labour Statistics.
Yeah, which, can I say, is like losing at a 100-metre race and then firing the stopwatch. You're firing the person who keeps the statistics, who takes the data in.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
But also at the same time, you've done about 5 100-metre races before that and you keep on pointing the stopwatch and being like, this is the best stopwatch ever. We love this stopwatch.
You're holding the stopwatch as you run and you stop it before you get there. That's basically Trump's approach.
Yeah.
I'm sad Queenie's not here this week to join us because I know she likes sticking the boot in on any Trump madness.
Busy lady.
A lot of producing.
Up at the fringe, yeah. Smashing it there. So
Queenie sends her apologies and we will see her next week.
Yeah.
Let's get into round one. And the big story this week is the continued political meltdown over immigration. Mike, what's Labour's latest bright idea?
Their bright idea basically in a nutshell seems to be wait for Nigel Farage to host his now weekly press conference on a Monday.
Yeah.
Disagree with everything he says for 2 days and then implement what he said originally. So he's really jumping on the bandwagon of the riots in Epping and the horrible anti-immigrant sentiment that's grown. So he's saying all criminals who've committed crimes of sexual nature should have their ethnicity revealed. And now Home Secretary Yvette Cooper came out on Tuesday and said, yeah, actually, do you know what? We should do that for transparency. They want to know people's ethnicity for transparency, which is quite ironic because she can't seem to see past the skin. It's not very Labour. It's not very socialist. It's not what people voted for. It's not what people expect. And it's not going to douse the flames. So it's a bit baffling.
Essentially, it's like Labour sort of just moved to the right and Farage goes, right, take my flag out there and I'll just move it even further.
Yeah.
Because he can just say whatever he wants.
And yeah.
I do like that he's using this lull in kind of summer politics that you normally get to get as much attention as possible.
Yeah.
And because nothing else is really going on. And I like he's almost doing like a reverse Farage in that he's not holidaying when he should be holidaying.
Yeah.
Right? So at the time when you actually are allowed to go off and do whatever, he's like, no, this is my time for politics.
Yeah. He's calling it his crime campaign, which sounds like the sort of thing a Batman villain begins, you know? Yeah. Announcing all these plans about crime, all these new rules.
Yeah.
They're all really ridiculous. Things like hiring more big strapping male police officers, getting the army in as if they're not going to be busy enough in the next couple of years.
Also, yeah. It's funny where they've got this reform slogan of like Britain is lawless, which is like, for me, the theatrics of that, of like Britain is lawless. Yeah. I think they should really lean into it. I think Farage should like fight off a gang of youths on his way to the lectern.
Like the warriors.
Yeah. He arrives with like one sleeve ripped off to be like, see, this is just on the way here. Someone just really liked my suit.
One of those fake arrows through his head.
But he just does the whole thing just pointing towards it. It's as if to be like, you know?
Lawless. Lawless.
I told you.
Lawless Britain does sound like a bad Channel 5 show.
I'm going to disagree with you there. It sounds like a good Channel 5 show.
My favourite one, they had one about boating disasters called Ship Happens.
That is good. That's good.
Yeah, that's actually much better.
I don't know if you guys saw as well, Michael Gove was on a podcast talking about Nigel Farage, and he said that Farage is not ready to be Prime Minister and won't be in 4 years' time, which is kind of the kiss of death, because he essentially did exactly the same thing to Boris Johnson in 2016.
Oh, God.
He like, challenged him in the leadership contest, and then he became Prime Minister, what, 3 years later?
Gosh.
Yeah. He said about his feelings about Nigel Farage were very powerfully ambivalent, which is sort of like, you know, he's got these mixed feelings because he disagrees with everything he says, but there's a possibility that he might get into power, which to go is like, he can't hold off that feeling of wanting to grab onto the coattails of that person who...
To be fair to Michael Gove, he was on a massive come down when he said this, so... You know, it was a very emotional time for him.
It was a dark time for him, you know. He was
literally, it was like 4 a.m. and he was outside Ministry of Sound.
Very powerfully ambivalent kind of fits, I think, with that phrase you had last week, Mike, of, you know, I support this but with no enthusiasm.
Which is how I feel every time I hear the word Michael Gove said.
And the only other thing I sort of like with the Labour stuff, then he sort of like prisons have like basically now realised they're like having to make space for this weekend. It's almost like, you know, when like a big event is going on, like the football's on and pubs are like, okay, we've got to get ready for this. The prisons are like, all right, we got a load of people coming in because of both the Palestine action, which they're going to try and arrest literally everyone who's going to the Palestine action protest.
Yeah.
And then also all of the asylum hotel arrests. And you sort of think it's the perfect odd couple sitcom right there. You've got like a skinhead draped in St. George's flags, still mourning the death of his XL bully with an 85-year-old vicar, you know, in a cell.
I'd watch that.
I'd pay to watch it.
Coming to Channel 5 soon. I think though, but that touches on, if we are going to go down this route of pigeonholing criminals, I don't want to do it on where they come from. Mm-hmm. I want to know more interesting things like what they watch on TV.
I was going to say, what's their favourite show?
What's their favourite show? Or what's their Tesco's meal deal choice?
Are they a Samantha or are they a Carrie, for example?
Exactly, because we all know a lot of Samanthas are absolute criminals.
Totally.
Yeah, so I kind of think if we're going to go down that route, I'd rather do it on those terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, favourite colour would be good to know, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So then you're walking down the street, you see someone in a green T-shirt. Keep your wits about you.
6'8" ginger in a green T-shirt.
They're either a criminal or they're still doing Brat Summer, even though it's completely over now.
Which is criminal, essentially.
Yeah.
But I mean, we talked about reform policies pushing Labour one way and arguably like the Tories trying to like hang on for dear life, you know, with similar stuff and people to hear them. But talking to Nigel Farage, and he found someone this week that he was very happy to welcome into the fold.
Yes.
Who was that you found?
He has welcomed into the loving fold of reform the Police and Crime Commissioner for Leicestershire and Rutland, Rupert Matthews, who is defecting to reform after a 40-year membership with the Tories. The stuff he said around it is very bizarre. He said, police officers are all too often working with one hand tied behind their back. But surely once they get the hang of handcuffs, that sort of thing stops happening. So I don't know what he's on about there. He also said he daily faces a fight against crime. He sees ordinary, hardworking people burgled, robbed and mugged. Shoplifting is getting out of control. He goes on about this. It sounds like he's not fighting crime. He's just standing there and watching it. He just describes all the crime that's happening around him.
He's just written it down.
He also said...
collecting crime.
He said, importantly, for local residents, my position as Police and Crime Commissioner remains unchanged, as does my commitment to the manifesto on which I was elected. So there's no point him defecting if it has no effect on what his policies are going to be.
Yeah,
I like the idea that he's like watching it and collecting it for some kind of like poetry collection, because he talks about the dark heart of wokeness, which I was like, that's the most emo phrase I've ever heard.
I've got that Panic at the Disco album.
He's got an interesting hobby. He seems to be quite into paranormal activities. I feel Jack, you've been looking into this, right?
I'm going to sort of slightly defend him here.
Oh, God.
And say that he...
there we go.
Every week, Jack.
All right. No, but he's written a load of books about ghost sightings, UFOs, cryptozoology, which is basically like Bigfoot, Sasquatch, all this sort of stuff, and other paranormal subjects.
Is crypto just a byword for bullshit? Because I've never understood crypto. And then now you just used it in the, with the phrase zoology. Is. Can you say, like, crypto politics? That's what reform
crypto
do.
Podcasts, yes, that's maybe. The, that could
crypto,
be
us. That's us. We're, are we a crypto podcast?
I think let's, we might
let's,
be,
not,
yeah.
let's not pull at that thread.
But this is where my defense comes in, because although he's been writing about paranormal subjects, he's written about a lot of other stuff, right?
Oh.
River Matthews, on Amazon, he has 243 books.
What?
Some of which are legendary animals and like Sasquatch, cryptozoology, UFOs, but a lot of other stuff. So I want to ask you, right?
God.
Here we go.
What do you think his most popular book is? It's not one of the ghost sightings, UFOs, cryptozoology, or paranormal stuff.
I would say, is it Love in the Time of Bigfoot, crypto-erotic fantasy?
You wish, Mike. I know you're reading that at the moment because you keep on texting me passages from that book. So.
Oh, there's some passages in there, all right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know what they say about big feet?
Yeah.
He doesn't even wear big socks, so I can't make that joke. It's called The Pope's Every Question Answered is his most popular book.
That's a bold statement.
Every question.
Listen, and some of the reviews have pointed that out because someone said, despite the subtitle, I don't really think we can consider this book to answer every question about the popes. And that was Business Secretary Jonathan Reynolds who wrote that review, our fun police.
Who would win in a fight between every pope?
Does it answer the question if Pope Leo is a Carrie or a Charlotte? That is the big question.
This is unfortunately Pope Leo, so he needs to do an updated version for that. I quite like that one of the books he wrote is called Record Breakers of the Sea, which is presumably about the record number of small boat crossings made in 2025.
Oh, I thought it was about what Chris Akabusi's ill-fated attempt to travel around the world in a dinghy.
Greg Rutherford jumping on the transatlantic sailboat. But generally, he seems to cover dinosaurs, Kent, and World War II. And his least popular book was 20th Century Industry, brackets, the 20th century.
That's someone who had a minimum word count he had to reach to get paid.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'd Google what 20th century industry, and it's basically just like production lines. It sounds so boring.
But it's good because he's the visionary that reform needs to take us back there. I feel like if we were doing the show this week, that his books would be just the perfect game.
Yeah.
It makes me quite sad that obviously the series isn't back until it's like the first week in October. And you do get some quite mad stuff happening in the summer because the fact that Parliament's in recess and people take advantage of it, or the fact that journalists don't have anything to do, so go out and cover mad stuff. And I hope he's going to keep this up. I hope he's not just going to go back on holiday when I get to September.
It's going to be a busy party conference month leading up to it, because you're going to have Tories just saying whatever they possibly can to get some attention. It's weird to think Labour and Reform are probably going to be the big two, and then you've got Jeremy Corbyn's thing, which is like, sounds like it's just going to be like world music and contemporary dance. Genuinely, that was their thing, what that guy was saying, bringing people together through dance and music.
But why should I tell you my policies when I can dance it for you?
How do you dance saying you want to keep allotments? I don't know. I reckon that's probably one that you can do.
Yeah, that's the easiest one to do.
Just to fill in on that, one of the new policies from Angela Rayner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's quite funny because in a way, the papers have just run with this. Do you know what? The papers have genuinely created beef because essentially Angela Rayner...
Beef tomatoes, maybe.
The creative beef tomatoes. So one of the great tomatoes up there with cherry. Angela Rayner, obviously housing minister, her job is to try and create more housing. They've made this big promise that they're going to do that. And I think one of the things she wants to do is give the councils more money, find more money for councils and find more space for them to sell to the developers. And then the money goes back into the local council. One of the side effects of this is, under the new rulings they're proposing, allotments would be fair game for councils to sell. What's funny is it's not specifically Angela Rayner wants to sell allotments, but the headline basically straight away was, Angela Rayner wants your allotment, which is great. And then it became, we wonder what Jeremy Corbyn thinks of that. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh yeah, of course. And he's actually come out and given a response to it.
In the Telegraph, weirdly.
I know, that's the funniest thing.
Home of the allotments.
But not normally home of Corbyn.
It's weird. It's sort of Labour's continued bullying of old people. They've gone for heating. They've gone for pensions. They're talking about raising the pension age again. now allotments. So you sort of think, what's next? Banning eating dinner before 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Cancelling Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking badly of Terry Wogan. It feels like any of those sort of things.
Jack.
Yes.
I've met Terry Wogan. He's a hero and a saint, and he was a prince among men. And I was like, just keep Terry Wogan's name out of your goddamn mouth.
Mate, I listen, I'm not saying anything bad. That's what I'm saying. That's no. The whole point. Points of view, listen, that was viewing for me and my grandma. Oh. All the time we'd watch it. Oh. Loved yeah. it.
What a guy.
Lovely voice.
I did enjoy that Corbyn said one of the big things that he loved about allotments was the joy of digging ground for potatoes, which mm-hmm. I thought is also... I think how Reform find members for their new political team.
Yeah.
The full quote, he said, is this government going to put the nail in the coffin of the joy of digging ground for potatoes on a cold, wet February Sunday afternoon? And I appreciate the idea, but I feel like that sentence has put me off going outside God. Ever.
Wait, so let's hang on. So in my head now, I've got, it's cold and wet, but there's a coffin.
There's a coffin.
And in the same grounds as the coffin is nails and potatoes. But also like a cold, wet Sunday, I think of like, isn't that the traditional football quote? You say, yeah, but Messi couldn't do it on a cold Wednesday night in Stoke.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's had an absolute nightmare with his analogy there.
I also love that they're like, and this is the guy that's going to bring Gen Z back to politics. Yeah. Welcome back to In the News This Week. It's time for round two now, where we've each brought a story from the past week that we think would work best for round two of the show. So, Mike, what story have you got for us this week?
Well, I tell you what, genuinely, I'm having a dilemma. I've changed my story literally mid-show or just before we came on air.
Drama. Well, live drama.
Live drama. Well, I was going to talk about the royals and this new book that's come out, but I think there's a sort of level of factual inaccuracy. It's sort of
where
like...
Prince Harry definitely did not punch Prince Andrew in the face.
No, he's more than capable of giving himself a bloody nose, as we discovered on his Newsnight interview. no, so I'm not going to talk about it because it's a bit like fiction. But something else caught my eye. I was on my way home. I was grabbing a snack before the podcast.
Hello.
In Tesco.
Insight into the life of Mike Raymond here.
Yeah.
But I was reaching for a snack and I was looking at the sandwiches. They had a birthday cake sandwich.
What?
Birthday yeah. cake sandwich.
Have you seen this?
No.
And then I Googled it. It's this thing that's gone viral this week.
Oh.
So it literally is what you think. It's full of
candle wax.
Yeah. But it's a Tesco's packaged sandwich and it has what looks like birthday cake inside, like icing, jam, sponge.
I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, I need to Google this.
Okay, that is one of the saddest things I've ever seen is yeah. two sandwiches on their side with yeah. a birthday candle. Oh. That is like, you know when you're talking about like going to the service station and yeah. you've forgotten your partner's oh. birthday.
Oh, that would be amazing to get that for someone oh for them and then put a candle in it.
But cake is the same category as bread. It can't go in bread, you know?
They once did a lasagna sandwich, so the rules of sandwiching are nothing to Tesco's. They respect nothing that's sacred about the sandwich. Any idea why they've launched this?
Is it because it's the anniversary of Tesco's? Is it like they've been around for 100 years?
It's an anniversary of something. A 30-year anniversary of...
Meal deal.
That would be way too interesting. The club card.
Oh. Oh my God.
So they made a birthday cake sandwich.
Did you get it, Mike?
I didn't get it.
Oh, you should have brought it to show
us.
Oh,
my Raymond.
I'm one birthday cake sandwich short of a diabetes diagnosis. So let's face it. Oh,
is that Emerald so unhappy about it? She's just left.
Has she just gone? She's just thrown her laptop out the window and gone to go get a sandwich.
Sorry.
Emerald, we thought you'd gone for a birthday cake sandwich then.
Yeah. Ran out the door immediately.
Emerald, you've got something white under your nose.
Covered in jam.
Smothering yourself.
I love that you're out on the streets bringing us stories, Mike.
Yeah, hey.
That's really inspiring.
That's what I do. I'm in the food aisles. If there's some weird food, I will find it. I will hunt it down.
A reporter out in the
bloodhound. So, Tesco's viral birthday sandwich. It looks disgusting.
Thanks, Mike. Emerald, how about you? What have you got for round two this week?
I've got a celebration for round two as well. I want to wish you all a happy Squonkapalooza.
Oh,
yes.
Happy Squonkapalooza, guys.
Happy Squonkapalooza to you too.
I
didn't know you celebrated.
Are you familiar with this, Jack?
I very briefly read about the Squonkapalooza.
Oh, you should have gone.
I would love to have gone.
Because you're in New York right now and the Squonkapalooza is an all-ages cryptid festival.
Crypto?
That takes place...
So it's a shit festival.
It does not sound shit, Mike. It's a festival that celebrates the squonk, which is Pennsylvania's ugliest creature. It's a depressed fictional pig. It's basically Porky Pig on a come down, if you can picture that. That's what
I'm just imagining Trump.
Fair enough.
Like Trump in his pants. Enough. Like he's in his Y fronts and he's got like a McDonald's wrapper.
Someone's just
him.
Handed him the job statistics.
And he's like,
printed out,
scratching his belly.
The organisers described the squonk as the saddest of folklore creatures who cries constantly because it's so ugly. And I suspect anyone who was a teenager in the noughties can relate to that. So I feel like the squonk is our mascot. It has loose-fitting skin and warts, and its closest relative is the boar or the pig. And I just want to say right now, there is no evidence to suggest that David Cameron has anything to do with why this pig cryptid is sad. Okay?
So can I just check your source for this? It's not from a certain esteemed writer.
I didn't know about his books, so I should now go back and check them. I bet he's got one on the squonk.
The Squonk by Rupert Matthews.
Basically, this squonk was written about in a 1910 book about fearsome creatures of the lumberwoods, and Pennsylvanians have adopted it as their own. They said, "It's not big and scary like Bigfoot or Mothman. People hear its story, feel sad and pity him." So it's kind of like how Europe feels about the UK.
It's like Ed Davey.
Yeah. Ed Davey is the UK squonk.
He is.
Oh, my God. Loose-fitting skin, warts, depressed, constantly crying.
But look, we should celebrate him in the same way that they celebrate the squonk, because the event includes a compliment contest where participants can try and cheer up the squonk, and you can just give him a simple pick-me-up, like, "I love you, squonk." Yeah. Or some people have written poems and songs. Basically, it's a bigger pity party than the Conservative conference.
Yeah. And he no longer identifies as a squonk.
The kind of most bizarre thing is that the place that's having Squonkapalooza, called Johnstown, it's the birthplace of Steve Ditko, who's the co-creator of Spider-Man, Doctor Strange. So it's got someone from that town who's created this like super expensive franchise. But no, they're celebrating the squonk.
Basically, there's a massive pool of mercury that's poisoned the town's water supply and no one's found out about it yet. Yeah.
What an amazing PR spin to be like, you know, this town that's been left in this kind of health hellhole. And they're like, "Oh, it's just look at the squonk. Celebrate the squonk."
Yeah.
Thanks, Emerald. That's great. It's a story I bought this week for round two. Is about a mega rat. I don't know if you saw this, but they found this humongous rat in Redcar in Cleveland. And it felt very Have I Got News For You, because it also fed into the kind of complaints of cuts to council services. So like, basically someone found this massive rat and there's a picture of it, the classic hold the rat quite as close as you can to the camera to make it look like it's the size of a Great Dane, essentially. But they did measure this one. You know, normally you see it and they're holding it as close as they can.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Oh, that's half the size of that man.
Yeah.
But they did measure this one and it was 22 inches or 56 centimetres.
Or
cat-sized.
Cat-sized. Or
half a squonch.
Yeah, half a squonch. Or the length of a carry-on luggage. Mm. Or...
Oh.
A desktop monitor sized, which I thought was one of the most bizarre comparisons you could give.
Also, like, desktop monitors are different sizes.
They vary in sizes,
So much variation.
It's not an objective measurement.
Or, my favourite, it's the size of 5 tins of beans end-to-end.
Pre or post-shrinkflation.
Yeah, very good.
I saw this in the paper, I saw someone say this is as big as a dog. And then later in the article revealed he had a pug.
Right.
So you go, okay. That's
your version of dog.
Yeah.
It's in Redcar in Cleveland, and they said the council does not offer a pest control service, but its website says officers can offer free advice over the phone. E.g., we think you should hire a pest control company, probably is their advice.
Or hit it with a spade, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe they're more direct.
Spade.
Yeah. You need a big spade. It would have to be a
couple of monitors.
The world is experiencing significant increases in rat numbers, and research in January showed Washington DC got a 390% increase in rats, which, you know, the fact that it coincided with Trump's inauguration and the administration coming in has got nothing to do with that.
It's all the McDonald's wrappers outside the White House.
But there's quite a nice little oopbo I thought could be chucked on the end of it, because I'm going to ask you a question. Who could really do with a steady influx of healthy rats?
Well, the Tories, they've lost all theirs because they've fled the sinking ship.
No, the place that could be looking for us is a Danish zoo. I don't know if you saw this, but what? Aalborg Zoo is appealing for donations of healthy small pets to be fed to predators.
No. And
the zoo basically, amazing. They put out a call for chicken, rabbit and guinea pig owners to say, look, if your pet looks like it's going to be put down, but it's healthy...
What?
Send it to the zoo. So it's like that. I think what they're trying to say is, look, if you've had enough of your pet,
Just tell the kids it was sick. Just say, sorry.
Right.
Pepe didn't feel very good. And now he's in an alligator.
Wow.
Don't worry. They reassured the owners by saying that the pets would be gently euthanized.
With a carnivore's mouth.
Yeah. Or like a 6 tin of bean shovel. As we talked about. But I love the idea. I've never heard of the term gently euthanized because I'd love to know what roughly euthanized is. Is that just pushing something off a cliff, basically?
I think gently euthanized is when you get sent to the House of Lords. It's the slow cooking of euthanasia.
Yeah. And we've performed this act countless times in Westminster.
Yeah.
I also enjoy that they tried to soften the blow to pet owners by adding, after being euthanized, the animals will be used as fodder. Which was an actual quote.
Why did they pick the word fodder? I love
it. Is that an unfortunate translation? Because that is so brutal. Also, are they looking for staff?
Can you imagine they're saying, don't worry, Timmy. Tails the rabbit has gone to that big farm in the sky to become fodder.
Yeah.
They say the zoo needs these donations to imitate the animal's natural food chain. And an example they used was the European lynx, which I'm sure constantly just comes across sedated guinea pigs called Fluffy in the wild. You know, like how does that possibly recreate natural conditions? Sheesh.
I feel like this zoo is run by a burgeoning serial killer who's just found the perfect way to satisfy his lust for murder.
Yeah, that's not a good look for you, Mike.
No.
Emil just said this serial killer should be working.
I stand by it.
I'm not a psychopath, I'm a sociopath.
Nice. Okay, great.
That's fine then.
Yeah.
And just as a final note, don't worry, it's not just small animals. The zoo also said it would welcome horses.
No.
adding that our needs vary throughout the year. Which I can only imagine is because they're holding a kind of work summer party and they need ingredients for the lasagna, you know?
Have they made a real life Jurassic Park? Are they like winching cows into like
definitely
fauna filled enclosures? Definitely. I think someone needs to go to Aalborg and investigate what's going on.
Oh my God.
Finally, it's time for round three, the missing words round. I'm going to read out some headlines from the past week and you just need to fill in the missing words. So, first up, the United States Department of Agriculture are using what to scare off wolves?
They're using wolves to scare off wolves. They haven't thought this through and they've actually made a mega pack.
They're using houses made of brick to scare off wolves.
Nice.
Did they start out with anything else? Was it brick their first choice?
They started with straw, they moved on to wood.
It's been years of projects. Years of failed policies.
Yeah.
And so many dead pigs. So many gently euthanized pigs.
It's why the squonk now exists. Yeah. It's why the squonk's so sad.
Yeah, because of all his relatives.
The local zoo just has a lot of fat animals. Oh, they still can't move. They're just dragging themselves along.
No, the answer is United States Department of Agriculture are using Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver to scare off wolves. Hollywood has been very quiet at the moment, you know? You've got to take your gigs while you can.
They're just out there barking at them. What's happening?
They've gone full method. No, this is a new report basically from the Wall Street Journal that said that the USDA, they're using different sounds through loudspeakers to kind of broadcast things that are considered to be like alarming. So they do like fireworks, gunshots, the sort of sounds that Mike would play.
His garage nights.
Yeah. Inside, just that constantly played out to wolves.
Yeah.
But what they're doing is the fight between Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver in the movie Marriage Story, where they're really going at each other.
Oh, wow, yeah, they do.
It's considered to be one of those alarming sounds.
Wow.
Okay, next up, Airbnb host cancels booking because guests were what?
I actually saw this. I think it was Chelsea fans, and it was me.
Yeah, I'll take it.
No.
I'll take it.
too polite in their initial messages.
Nice.
Because they told the host that they were coming for Squonkapalooza.
Squonkapalooza, Mike.
What's it called?
Squonkapalooza. Put some respect on the squonk's name, please.
Get my squonk's name out of your goddamn mouth.
Yeah. It's Airbnb host cancels booking because guests were from Wales.
Oh, no.
Basically, two people who booked an Airbnb and essentially they asked why it had suddenly been declined and refunded. Mm-hmm. And the message back from the host read, because you're from Wales.
What the heck?
Yeah, as someone whose wife is Welsh, I have nothing to say on this story.
That's why you regularly cancel on her, isn't it, Mike?
No comment.
I think it might just be, you know,
good old xenophobia.
Yeah. Oh. Why not?
Did someone get really confused and think they meant they come from like Wales, like as in the animal? And they were like, well, that person's going to stink.
Oh, they're not going to be able to fit in there.
Yeah.
It's only a bloody queen sized bed. Two of them. We posted this missing word round on our social media channels, and congratulations to GoldenArrow74 on Instagram, who made us laugh with their response when they said, Airbnb host cancels booking because guests were clashing with the curtains. Were they the Welsh dragon, I guess? Maybe that's one. Follow Have I Got News For You on Instagram and Twitter so you can enter our missing word round when we post another one next Tuesday. And finally, study finds what increases trust in science?
Study finds that conspiracy theorist increases trust in science as soon as they need to catch a flight to go on holiday. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Jack, as our resident conspiracy theorist, would you say that that's fairly accurate?
Does Jack have a history with conspiracy theories, Mike?
I don't think I do. Do I?
I don't know. I just feel like you're never that far away from it, mate.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
What a testament to my character.
I feel like you're one broken relationship away from like setting up your own website called 911lizards.com.
Oh, my God.
Listen, I've got the domain. I'm just waiting for the right time.
It's a really great tool. Redhead physics teachers increase trust in science.
Oh,
you're too kind, but it never did. So I've said that with far too much sadness. Yeah. I've gone full squonch on that.
I was going to say squonk levels of sadness.
Oh my God, that was, yeah. I feel like I need to compliment you now.
Anyway, moving on. The answer is study finds lying increases trust in science. So a study in Bangor University found that basically the good experiments that have gone well increase public trust, but then when you talk about failed experiments, it completely decreases trust. So they just basically go like, oh, right, so scientists don't know what they're talking about, which kind of feeds into the we're all tired of experts a little bit, I guess.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they, ironically, they have to kind of behave like conspiracy theorists and just be like completely confident.
Right, just totally back yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like the absolute antithesis of how you're supposed to do science, right?
Yeah.
That's not worrying at all.
Thank you for listening to In the News this week. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
For updates on the show, make sure you're following Have I Got News For You on Instagram, TikTok and Twitter.
You can also get in touch with us by emailing podcasts@hattrick.com. That's Hattrick with 2 T's.
Make sure you're followed or subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening to it now. And we'll see you here for next week's episode.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right, squomp, squomp.
In the News This Week is presented by Jack Harris, Queenie Miller, Emerald Paston, and Mike Raymond. The producer is Diggory Waite. The executive producer is Claire Broughton. And the music is by Big George. In the News This Week is a Hattrick podcast.